One of my favorite movies is Napoleon Dynamite. Anybody watched that movie before? Put up your hand if you've seen the movie Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah. It was a 2004 American, oh, I didn't see, anybody here watch it back yet? So, yeah. It's a 2004 American independent coming-of-age comedy film. It's specifically about a nerdy high school student named Napoleon Dynamite, who deals with several dilemmas, including befriending a Mexican immigrant who decides he wants to be class president in grade 12. Also awkwardly pursuing a romance with a fellow student who herself, she herself is hugely shy, and living within a somewhat dysfunctional family. And I think it's fair to say that Napoleon didn't have an easy relationship with his family. It's kind of complicated. It's even too complicated to even go into as a backstory. But he especially had a complicated relationship with his older brother, Kip. And there's this one scene where Napoleon and Kip are investigating Uncle Rico's time machine. And I don't have time to tell you why Uncle Rico has a time machine, why he bought a time machine out of the back pages of the National Enquirer, right? It's too long to go into. Just take that for given. But I got this clip here. I want to show it to you. And I think we've figured out our problems around showing video. Okay, here we go.
Is that yours? Don't touch it. It's Uncle Rico's.
What's it for?
Hey, do you want to just start it again? We need to have the, I'd
It's
like the, yeah, there we go. Perfect.
Is that yours?
Don't touch it. It's Uncle Rico's.
What's it for?
It's a time machine, Napoleon. We bought it online.
You're right.
It works, Napoleon. You don't even know.
Have you guys tried it yet?
No. So, are you ready?
Yeah, hold on. I forgot to put in the crystals. Okay, turn it on. It's a piece of crap. It doesn't work.
Well, I could have told you that.
I showed you this clip because I really want to draw your attention to Kip's reaction to his brother's torment. Did you pick up on that? Did you see that little smile that came across his face as his brother was in great pain? In case you didn't see it, I got it in slow motion in another video. It's pretty subtle, though. Look at his face. Look at that little smile. Right? It goes away quickly. It's masked very well. What do you make of Kip's smile? What is that smile about, do you suppose? It's almost as if Kip is enjoying his brother's suffering, don't you think? I think he is enjoying his brother's suffering. And he's kind of strangely turned on in the moment by his brother's pain. Not turned on sexually, but just turned on in a sense in himself. He's getting pleasure from his brother's torment. Why do you suppose that is? Well, we don't really know for sure. It's never explained, but it could be the complicated relationship they share, a mixture of love and hatred, friendship and contempt, all bundled into one relationship, mixed together. Seeing somebody you hold in contempt get their comeuppance in life can be very rewarding. We were driving back from Bruce County on Friday evening, and this guy pulled the stupidest driving stunt I've seen in a long time. Very dangerous. I would call it a most reckless driving stunt. And I looked around hoping there was an OPP car in the area. Wouldn't it be wonderful if an OPP car just pulled out and just chased him down and gave him a big thing? I would honk on the horn and put my arms out celebrating this guy getting caught for his stupidity. I'd like to see this guy suffer for what he did. Generally speaking, the idea of that people get pleasure out of other people's pain is a disturbing thought. It's not easy to come to terms with, I think. We don't really like the idea that people gain pleasure through the pain and suffering of others. Now, there's a term for gaining pleasure from other people's pain and suffering. It's called sadism. The term comes from the writings and philosophy of the Marquis de Sade, a French nobleman who lived in the late 18th and early 19th century. And de Sade proposed that there can be pleasure in pain, and that the line between the two of them is very thin at times, and that rather than limit or stigmatize this truth, we should free it to its full potential. And I learned about this truth when I was a kid, about that line between pain and pleasure, when my children's teeth started falling out. Because I can remember many times playing with my loose tooth in my mouth. Did you ever do that? Wobble it, wiggle it back and forth, you play with it in your tooth. Sometimes I would take my fingers and I'd pull it back and forth, and I'd get this horrible pain, but it also felt good in a really weird kind of way. I found it strangely pleasurable. And often I couldn't stop myself from doing it, even though it hurt a lot, moving my tooth back and forth in my mouth. There's something compelling about it. There was a certain kind of reward in it, even though as a kid, it didn't make any sense to me why it should be this way. When you get pleasure from your own pain, this is called masochism. And if you combine getting pleasure from your pain with getting pleasure from other people's pain, it's called sadomasochism. There's a really funny film scene that I won't show you today in the movie Little Shop of Horrors, where a sadistic dentist played by Steve Martin meets a masochistical patient played by Bill Murray. And there's a strange dance-like interaction between the two of them. Steve Martin tries to cause as much pain as possible to Bill Murray, and Bill Murray, the masochist, he's just lapping it up, enjoying it in a strange and tormented way. And the whole interaction has a kind of quasi-sexual tone to it. It's very odd, it's very funny, and it's very disturbing. Because what does it say about our human nature? And what does it say about us as people, ourselves? There was an interesting case a few years back in 2011, R versus J.A., and at trial we learned that a husband had placed his hands around the throat of his wife and choked her into unconsciousness and then had sex with her. But he had done this with her consent. They had agreed on this together. They had agreed to do this in advance. They were experimenting with erotic asphyxiation. I guess you can put someone into a strange hallucinogenic state through strangulation. And that enhances sexual pleasure. Who would have guessed? The court case focused on consent and whether sexual acts can be done to a person while they are unconscious, even if they've already consented to it being done to them. But for me, the real issue of the case was strangling somebody for heightened sexual pleasure. Doesn't that seem depraved at some basic level of life? Strangling someone you presumably love or care about, at least, for greater sexual pleasure? Or from the other side, being strangled by someone you love for heightened sexual pleasure? How do these two come together? How do you put love and strangulation together? I don't think it can be done, really. I love you so much, so let me strangle you into unconsciousness so we can have great sex. Does that make any real sense? When I was a young kid, I loved the Batman TV show. You know, with Adam West's Batman. Any of you remember watching that show? I've got them on disc now. I like them so much, right? You know, Adam West, you know, there's Robin, there was the Batcave, Alfred the Butler, the Batmobile. I even had a little Batmobile as a kid. My parents bought it for me. And I loved the show so much that one year I begged my mother to make me a Batman costume. And she agreed. I got a picture of myself there. This is from, I think, 67, 68. There's me in the middle. The other guy to our right, he got one of the store-bought ones, but I wanted my mom to make me an authentic Batman costume. And my younger brother, he was going to be Robin. And I remember my mom and dad one day taking me and my brother, and we went to every sewing store in Burlington where we grew up to find a pattern for Batman and Robin costumes, but sadly, no luck. And my brother and I were hugely disappointed. So my mom went the extra mile. And we drove into downtown Hamilton, which in those days was a big deal. And we looked for a pattern for Robin, Batman and Robin costumes, and didn't we strike gold? We got it. And a few weeks later, several weeks later, our costumes were done, and that's what we went out on Halloween with. And that picture is right before Halloween. I've got another picture there. That's a close-up of me. That's me at... Yeah, and that smile is authentic. She didn't have to ask me to smile for that picture. And I had the authentic Batman costume. Batman faced many villains, as you know, the Joker, the Penguin, the Riddler, Mr. Freeze. But one of the nastiest and most dangerous villains that Batman faced was Catwoman. In the TV series, she was played by Julie Newmar. I got a picture of her there, too. Yeah. As a kid, I could feel her vibe. Absolutely gorgeous and dangerous. As a kid, a seven-year-old, I knew this. The Batman TV series functioned at several levels. It was made for young kids like me. We like the Rock and Sock'em stuff, but it was made for adults too, as you can see why, right? Look at how Catwoman is dressed. Take a good look at her outfit, right? It's a tight black leather outfit with a mask. Usually she often wore a mask. And she's seen often in the series with a whip too. And I got another picture of a fan dressed up like her. Somebody's dressed up as Catwoman, as a fan of the Batman series. But go back to either, well, it doesn't matter, you can just stay there. Catwoman is depicted as a dominatrix. That's a woman who physically or psychologically dominates her partner in a sadomasochistic encounter. That's what she's dressed up like. And she often will wear that kind of costume for effect. Now, I didn't understand this as a kid. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a dominatrix until I was about 25 years old. That's women who make a lot of money living out the fantasy of domination and submission with people, mostly men, and yet I had already run into one as a young kid on a TV show. Who would have thought it? In the TV series, and in fact in the comic books too, Catwoman was a sadist. She gained pleasure out of other people's pain and suffering. She enjoyed inflicting pain and suffering on other people. Her life was built around the pattern of domination and submission in her relationships with other people. And part of me, as I'm looking at this, wondering, how could a seven-year-old be allowed to watch this kind of TV show? Like, how did that happen? And yet my mom and dad probably didn't really understand this very much either. I don't know if they knew about dominatrix back in the mid-1960s. That whole part of life was kind of hidden away. Over the last 60 years, it's come full force into our culture, so much so that this woman can think it's a good thing to dress up like a sadist. Think about that. This is the character is someone who enjoys inflicting pain on other human beings and will ultimately stop at no limit in herself to do so. Now, I had already figured out this line between pain and pleasure long ago when I was a kid. By the time I was watching Batman, I'd already figured out that line through wiggling my teeth in my mouth, my loose teeth. And I'd already learned something about the power relationships between people because as a kid, I'd been bullied at school and I'd already probably bullied a few younger kids of my own. So I learned about how domination and submission works in life and my relationships with others. Over the summer, we've been looking at some of the articles of doctrine of the United Church of Canada. Back in 1925, when the United Church was formed, we laid out some basic doctrine of the church, and we, over the last several weeks, have looked at the introduction to the articles of doctrine. We looked at our doctrine on God. We looked at our doctrine on revelation and our doctrine on divine purpose. And last week, we looked at our doctrine on creation and divine providence. And there we came to understand that in the United Church, at least, we believe there's a goodness to creation and to life that precedes everything else. Whatever else might be wrong in the world, whatever else might be wrong, God made it. And this week we're looking at Article 5 of the Sin of Man. For all the good in life that last week's doctrine celebrated, there's something sick within human nature. Something's twisted and bent. I don't know if you agree with me on that. If you didn't agree with me, I'd probably have to show you about 5 or 6 pictures of Auschwitz and the fields of Cambodia and the wars in Ethiopia and Sudan that are going on right now. I'm not going to try to make that case today. I'm going to just take that as a given, that we all understand there's something bent and sick within human nature. There's something self-sabotaging about our human nature. We are chronically causing our own defeat in life, undermining our own best interests as individuals and as a species. And at times, this has catastrophic consequences. Now, here's Article 5, and I realize I forgot to put it up on the screen, so listen carefully. This is what the United Church says of the sin of man. He says this, we say this, we believe that our first parents, being tempted, chose evil, and so fell away from God and came under the power of sin, the penalty of which is eternal death. And that, by reason of this disobedience, all men are born with a sinful nature. That we have broken God's law, and that no man can be saved but by his, God's, grace. Now, I'm not certain Article 5 really gets at the biblical understanding of the human condition. Because I think that Article 5 got it backwards. We didn't choose evil and then fall under the power of sin. Rather, we fell under the power of sin and then chose evil. They've got it reversed, and I think they've got it in the wrong order. What is the power of sin in life? You know I've been talking about this a lot over the last couple of years. It's our claim to ourselves. It's our claim to our right to ourselves. I've mentioned it to you many times. It's me putting my life under my own management and you putting your life under your own management. That's the biblical notion of sin. The story of Adam and Eve in Genesis 2 is about how they fired God and put their lives under their own management. They took control over their own lives, and they did so because they wanted to decide for themselves good and evil. It's not that they chose evil, not at all. It's that they wanted to decide for themselves between good and evil, and in doing so, they elevated themselves into the God position in their lives. And that's the biblical understanding of sin. That's sin according to the Bible. And because we now sit in the God position in our own lives, we have a twisted human nature. We're like a bent, twisted lampstand. We're bent out of shape. I got a little lampstand there. Instead of standing upright in its proper form, we're now bent and twisted out of shape. And that makes our lives at times very difficult to live. Understand, it's not that we're necessarily bad people. It's just that we're now more vulnerable to the impulses and yearnings in us that are not life-enhancing. In fact, they're often life-detracting. By sitting in the God position in life, we make ourselves vulnerable to that thin line between pain and pleasure that we all know about. We live often in our lives far too close to that line. And we're like a 7-year-old because we don't even know we're doing it. We are enmeshed into the sadomasochistical world in ways that we don't even begin to understand. We are power players in the world of domination and submission, and we don't even understand how it shapes our lives and our relationships with others. Paul, in his letter to the Colossians, writes that we are to put to death what belongs to our earthly nature. He means that we are to kill off the sadomasochistical impulses within us. That means we're not to seek pleasure in life through pain. We're not to seek pleasure in life through our own pain, and we're not to seek pleasure in life through the pain of others. We're not to seek validation in life through pain. We're not to seek validation in life through our own pain, and we're not to seek validation in life through other people's pain. It means we're not to seek vindication through pain. We're not to seek vindication in life through our own pain. We're not to seek vindication in life through other people's pain. This has nothing to do with God's creation within us. And then Paul goes on, and he gives us a list of examples of vices associated with the sadomasochistical world that runs on the principle of domination and submission. Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, greed, which is idolatry. Paul says to the Colossians, you used to live this way. You used to live in this world of the sadomasochistical world, in the world of domination and submission, but no longer. Why are they not to live anymore in this way? Well, because they've been rescued from it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. But if you read a little further down in Colossians, just a couple of verses, you find out why they're not to live this way anymore. They're not to live their old ways of life, and it's because they've been given the grace and goodness of God. They've been given God's love. This holy love has come into them. And because that holy love lives within them now, Paul says that means anger and rage and malice and slander and filthy language, they don't belong on your lips anymore. They're not meant to be a part of you. So he says they have nothing to do with love. So take off this old self, this old identity. Take it off. Get rid of it. Take off that old identity and the impulses that come out of the sadomasochistical world. They don't belong to you anymore. They never did really belong to you. They're not part of God's creation. That is who you are. And there's this new self that Paul says, you've got to put on this new self that comes in the identity of Jesus Christ. Put on this new identity in Christ, that let God renew you in the image of his Holy Son. And then he says, all the divisions of life, all the identity markers that we lift up to divide each other with, you know, Jew and Gentile, uncircumcised, circumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, we could add others to it, black, white, tall, short, fat, skinny, rich, poor. They don't matter anymore. See, that's all the divisions of that sadomasochistical and world, that world of domination, of submission, and they don't belong to us anymore because we're a new creation. Because Christ is all and in all. You know, the movie Napoleon Dynamite was not a religious movie, and yet it ends with a certain kind of vindication for the main characters. Because all the main characters leave behind the sadomasochistical world of pleasure through pain. Each one of them has experienced their own profound failure. Each one of them has, in a sense, been crucified by the sadomasochistical world. And because of this, they've stepped down. They've stepped down in life. In their failure, they step down. Yet in their failure is their redemption. And they're reborn at the end of the movie, each of them. And they are given a new identity. And they put on a new garment of sorts. They are now clothed in a new manner that leads to life. And I don't want to live in the world of the Marquis de Sade. It's coming out. It used to be hidden away, and we're seeing it more and more in our world. I don't want to live in Marquis de Sade's world. I don't want to live in a world run by his rules and his patterns. I don't want to live in that sadomasochistical world that's been given to me. I don't want to live anymore in the power dynamics. I don't want to live in the power dynamics of a world consumed by domination and submission. So I'm following Jesus. I'm following Jesus. And if you don't want to live in that world either, I'd be mighty happy to have your company as we leave that world behind. Maybe we can learn how to live out his love for us, the Lord's love. Maybe we can learn to live out Jesus' way of love together. We can live it out with each other, we can share it with each other, and then we can share it with others too who are ready to move in a new way.